for the strong and the bold who have been taunted and traumatised for over 37 years. This one is for you. Richmond, yes, Richmond, our premiers. 5:13 p.m. on Saturday, September 30, 2017, is officially Tiger Time.
We never wait until the last one.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name is Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And I want you to think back about, it's almost exactly 2 years, I think. And I don't know if it was an emergency podcast, but we certainly did a very excited podcast because for the first time in our adult lives, it seemed, Richmond was being taken seriously as a premiership contender because our premiership odds had come in to $7.
Yeah.
Two years later, they've come into $5.50. Because we're now, a bit fatter and a bit more smug. I don't think we're nearly as giddy as we were then. But are you feeling the hope?
Oh, very much so. I've been feeling the hope for a while. I mean, 2 years ago when this started to happen, we got pretty excited. But it was always a heavily qualified hope, as this year is as well. But, it's such an open year and there's so many teams of potential competitors. You can just see the potential if we do go on undefeated or go on a sort of 6-1 tear at the G. It just changes everything.
Yeah, I don't think I'm quite... I'm excited but sort of still keeping it in control. I think,
there are a lot of unknowns.
Yeah, there are a lot of unknowns. It's on the weekend's result was good. Certainly felt like we did what we needed to do, but Cornelio got injured right at the start, and they had a few players out, and we were favoured to win. So
yeah, I mean, there's a case to be made that they had their entire starting midfield out once Cornelio went down. You could argue that case. It's not 100%.
No, and when you've got a 23-year-old former number two pick in the draft in Toronto, who's an extremely good player, stepping in, there are worse ways to be. And you've still got Lucky Whitfield, Jeremy Cameron, Toby Green. So there's still quite a lot of top end.
Yeah, it was like
talent.
There was a moment I think early in the second quarter where the commentator said, we're talking about the potential of massive percentage booster. I'm not sure that was on the cards. Basically, if you got really too tight, closely matched teams, and one of them loses one of their prime midfielders for the game early on, it's pretty much advantage you, which is what happened. But I don't know. I never felt comfortable. I never felt we were going to destroy them. I mean, you can just see.
No, I felt pretty comfortable, all things considered, at three-quarter time.
Yeah, that's true. But, it's not like I was ever thinking, well, this is going to be a 10-goal win.
no.
Because the commentators were talking like it would be. And, it's just like, Jeremy Cameron is amazing. And since Rance went down, we have nothing remotely close to an adequate matchup for him.
Oh, look, Grimes was by far the best of the defenders, I thought. He did it. When he was matched up on him, I thought he was under control. But then, you also need Grimes is also the best matchup on Toby Green. And, without Rance, he's carrying a lot of the load against the super athletic guys.
Yeah, and it showed, that there were moments where Cameron took over the game. They're a supremely talented team. They seem to.
They're top end. I don't think they've got the same depth these days that they used to. But yeah, they're a good team.
Yeah, but you know, who are their role players? Like Brett DeLillo is a role player, and you know he's number one pick.
True.
All I'm saying is, look, the game was sort of actually. A bit of my take of the game was, if we're going to talk about the game, is rewatch the whole first goal, the Sydney Stack goal of the week. Mm. But not just what Sydney Stack did, but the whole ball movement.
It was great.
And then watch the second goal, which was, you know, sort of Key Ford, Lollapalooza. And to me, it was sort of the worst thing that could have happened was the first two goals of the game for us were the best things that they could possibly be. And I think we went a bit of Harlem Globetrotters.
Look, the first quarter was great. I mean, they had missed a few shots at goal, which made it look better than it was. But actually, before we get really stuck into the game, I did want to mention, look, what's overshadowed the whole week is the Jack Higgins situation, which... is really serious and scary, and you know, fingers crossed it all goes well, and that it's not a recurring for issue for him, and you know, he can make a full recovery for a normal life in the first instance, and then hopefully football next year.
Yeah, look, I'm glad we're doing the podcast now, which is a bit later than usual. Apologies, it's a Thursday, but I think, you know, it appears from what we know, it's not nearly as serious as we thought. But
it's not nearly as serious as it could have been. Interestingly, he seems to have had a genetic condition which has contributed to it. Just fingers and toes crossed for the best.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I could, like, it's sort of in these circumstances, it's never good to happen, but it's especially bad to happen to someone at his start of career when he hasn't had his sort of big third contract yet. There's all these other things you could say about what a tragedy it is, but, you know,
never mind the money. You know, he's 20 years old and he's got his whole life in front of him.
Yeah, look, completely agree. But, you know...
I do also think that being on the sidelines is going to drive him nuts. I don't think he's got the personality for enforced leisure.
But, okay, now that we can sort of... Let's just say he is okay, he's a human being. Having put that, you put your football hat on, you know, he may not have played in the final series either.
No, but
he would have been he would have been in the emergencies every week, but
it's a death match to get in the teams, like how
at his position.
Spots are, you know, Camden McIntosh has just been dropped a week after he signed a 2-year contract extension. Josh Caddy hasn't come straight back into the team. Despite playing a really good game last week, and you know, it's hard to
I would
it's hard to question who's coming ahead of him. It's really, really competitive.
I would give a second round draft pick in a second, maybe even a first, to have a second ruck who's as good at his job as Jack Higgins is good at being a small forward.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable.
Getting off the point. It is a very exciting time, and not to lose the big picture is we are now in the midst, we are completely neck deep in a premiership hunt.
Yes.
And a premiership hunt where we are not favourites, but we are still, it is a very, very viable position, and not to be forgotten how rarely this has happened over the last 39 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also very delicately poised. Like all the projections are for us to finish fifth, but there's not much between fifth. You know, it's still possible for us to miss the finals, still possible for us to finish top four. Like, it's really...
And the thing is, and you can win a premiership from fifth.
Yep.
Because the key thing is home finals, and we will get, you know, you finish fifth, we may get home finals all the way through.
Yeah, which would
be absolutely wonderful. And Nick, just before, seem to be talking about everything but the game, but I was so happy today that Chris got a game brought up, the MCG issue with Richmond, because it gave us a chance to relive the 2017 preliminary final, which I think it may be our most successful tweet ever that's not done straight after a game. It is.
We've had some Sydney Stack related content that's been very popular.
That's true.
But yes, salty Chris Scott is also a wonderful source of content.
Yes, and just reliving that Geelong preliminary final. It's such a happy memory for me. Yeah. I cannot think of it without getting goosebumps.
Yeah. Oh yeah, 245 likes. good times.
Yeah, it's been up for an hour, I think. Okay, so the game. So I do feel a bit like you that the moment Canelio went down, you know, we became favourites.
Well, we started off about 13, 14 point favourites, and you think
but favourites we really believed in.
Yes. And, you know, but when Canelio going down, 27 points seems about right.
Yeah, it's about par, isn't it?
Mm. Have you seen Tom Lynch look better than that? Like,
absolutely.
He did play better against Port Adelaide. But I'm not sure I've seen him look quite that frisky.
There's no doubt, like, if you look at his three goals, now it was only two contested marks, but the other one was effectively, it was a free kick. And he did actually take the mark.
Where he took the contested mark anyway.
But it didn't get counted as one, through a statistical fluke. It was pure football porn. Him connecting with Jack a few times, it was powerful stuff. It was the, you know, this is why it's worth the 7-year investment stuff. Mm. That to me, that and one of the issues I'll raise is, you know, what was most genuinely arousing from the game.
Yeah, he just moved really well. That was the, he looked light on his feet. He covered a lot of ground, but he's never going to be lightning fast. Like, he's always a bit of a workhorse, but yeah, that was a lot closer to the 2016 Gold Coast version, who was an extremely good player.
Yeah, and so the first two goals of the game was the long chain of hand passes that finished with the Sydney Stack goal of the round, and then the second one was Lynch to Jack. The game could not have started better.
Couldn't have started any better. Yeah. I'm sort of whispering this, but was Stack's goal a little bit selfish?
Oh, because he burnt Camden on the hand pass?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that. I was okay. As I was sort of saying before, I think the problem with Stack's goal, it was the play was so magnificent. Like, the whole setup of the goal, that, you know, there was four or five of our most skillful players, that it sort of, I think it set a bench, it got the team in a Harlem Globetrotters mindset. And if you watch in the second quarter, when we got in trouble sometimes, it was overhand passing and just trying to find that perfect chain again. I think it set the benchmark too high. So I didn't have a problem. I think it set an unreasonably high standard of ball movement. And then we got away from some good fundamentals at times in the first half because of it. Was Stack slightly selfish? Maybe. Is it okay for him to burn Camden in that circumstance? Probably.
Yeah, when you say the sentence out loud, you're like, if it was Dusty, you'd want him to handball.
And by the way, it was going to be a left foot kick. It's Yeah. Well, I mean, thing is, you can do it if it works. You can do it.
Mm. Yep. Definitely. Look, on coaches' votes, Tom Lynch was equal best on ground with Kane Lambert, and I'm really enjoying his form at the moment.
Lynch or Lambert?
Lambert.
There is a case that Lambert is almost our most important player right now.
We certainly missed him when he was out.
Like, he's just, I mean, the ratings didn't love him, but it just felt like in all the key moments he was there.
Mm.
Like, as a link-up play.
Yeah, in the third quarter, start of the fourth, bobbing up in key spots, working really hard, kicking goals. Mm. Playing well.
Yeah, it's just so important to the team. Like, absolute top liner for us.
Mm. I mentioned him before, but I liked Grimes' game. There were moments early on when they were sort of rotating people through full forward, and it just kind of didn't matter who it was, particularly if Cameron went forward and they were kicking either to Green or Himmelberg, one out. Like, he was not bothered by that situation.
Yeah, look, he had 10 intercepts. I thought he was trying to mark everything, even on a wet day. I thought he was great. You know, him and Vlosty both had 10 intercepts. Yes, they did.
Mm.
I thought they were both wonderful. And but Grimes particularly impressed me. So completely agree. Bolton.
He had a good game. He didn't have a great game, I thought.
Interesting. You've just described he didn't have a great game. He had 29 disposals and almost 40 pressure acts on the champion data scale, which is 40 is pretty good.
I know. Yeah, the AFL ratings didn't love him quite as much. The AFL ratings have loved him profoundly on several games this season. They didn't love him quite as much, and I thought he got shrugged a few times in he had a few almost tackles, and I really liked his game, and I have literally Googled to try and find out anything about his contract negotiations. But yeah, I'm enjoying the transition to midfield.
Yeah, look, I think he's profoundly influential these days.
Mm. And we got him for the tiebreaker pick.
indeed. Brando could have got three Brownlow votes. He hit those two shots a goal.
Yeah, true. Yeah, and he got five coaches votes. So
yeah,
he's certainly in the mix. And having previously said on this podcast, may well be a salary camp casualty. Da 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 da. Yeah, it kind of gave me pangs of anguish to. I think we might look. The signs aren't great. It's a thin free agent class. There's teams with tons of cap room chasing him.
He's not a Victorian. He's not a Victorian.
No, he's a Victorian.
Bolton.
He's from. I thought we were talking about Ellis.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. No. It's not great for Ellis. No, quite. True.
No. Yeah, Bolton's not a free agent, so it's all right. It's just harder. We're not hearing about a contract, and we're not hearing a lot of go-home buzz. I've heard one of the Adelaide teams had a crack, but that to me says Ralph Carr's just trying to get as much money out of the situation as possible. Mm. And we may have to choose between Bolton and Ellis.
Yeah. Agreed.
Should we talk about some of the negatives from the game?
Not yet. Just want to mention Prestia.
Okay.
Like, he's...
Look, let's... Oh, I've got one more, too. Could you talk about the meatball?
I've mentioned this before. His kicking is transformatively different than how it was when he joined Richmond. He can now drill them 55 metres. Like, there is whatever. Do not tell me that there wasn't something physically wrong 2 years ago, because you can't change your kicking that much. There is just, he's looking so much better these days.
Yeah, playing really well.
First quarter was superb, 12 touches as well. Sorry.
Yeah, it was. George Stagdon looked really dangerous.
But it was so it was George gives and he takes away. Like, I was just rewatching the highlights, and there was a moment where, do you remember there was a beautiful break? I think it was in the first or second quarter, and like, he had 50 million options, and he chose to hit Rioli into a dead pocket and managed to miss the kick.
Managed to stuff it up.
He chose the wrong option and missed the kick.
And he kicked that goal when he played on when he shouldn't have and was forced to run around and take a tough shot.
And he set up a beautiful Lynch goal, game, very positive, but also missed a set shot he should have made. You know, it was George gives and he takes away.
It was so George. So I know that, well, one of your particular passions is Ruckman, and one of your other passions as a player was snap goals from the right forward pocket. It's fair to say that Ivan Solberg's two attempts at snap goals could have gone better.
Actually, I liked one of them. like the one where he had the confidence to run through and actually have a crack. He struck it pretty well.
Yeah, that's true.
like, it wasn't that far away. I was after that moment that I tweeted out that Ivan Solberg is starting to get it as a footballer. And then probably no one else noticed, but then over the next quarter, having pumped him up a bit, he did like three or four terrible acts, that, you know, most people probably wouldn't have noticed, but, you know, just as a ruckman, he just didn't do the right things as a ruckman. There was a moment, do you remember that contested in mark he took in the back line? Really nice pluck that, if you look at it in the foreground, Dylan Grimes does the double-fisted pump in the air after Solo takes the mark. So don't tell me Dylan's not been riding trying to get the slightly unco young ruckman over the line. Like, he was so excited about, you know, ruckman taking a relatively regulation mark in the back line.
Oh, bless.
It was, yeah. But, you know, I'm if we're going to talk seriously about the right, like, I can live with Soldo because he's a big body and he really, like, he throws it in, like, he is losing, like, we lost the, hitouts. We lost the hitouts by a little bit, but we lost the hitouts to advantage by 5-13.
Which is quite a bit. Look, I thought Soldo was good early, you know, when we were right on top, but yeah, I thought Simpson got on top.
Yeah, look, the thing about Soldo is, because he's a big, strong lad, he's always a partial contest. Which is, when I turned to Chole, there were times when Tomlinson was just dominating him in the ruck.
Yeah, and Tomlinson's 194 centimetres. I don't mind if he struggles against, you know, really elite key ruck, but Tomlinson is nothing close. Like, he's a tall midfielder who rucks occasionally.
Yeah, and look, it was great that Chole kicked his goal, but
it was a well taken goal, and he still has these moments just where the athleticism shines. Like, he ran step for step with Jeremy Cameron at one point.
Yeah, that was lovely. And, you know, you could sort of talk yourself into, well, he's also a reserve back. But I just...
Oh, no.
Yeah. I just think, you know, there's this all... I mentioned this on Twitter, and there was this debate about, you know, we can't go back because 2018 proved that we need two rucks. Well, firstly, 2018, the Collingwood game, we really lost it when Nack was playing against Grundy. It wasn't actually Greg. But the second thing is, with the greatest respect to Chole, like, he does a lot of good stuff, and he does a lot of stuff that other ruckmen don't do, but he's not a ruckman.
No. Look, I'm happy I'm happy with the idea of giving him a chunk of football in the hope that he improves in the middle of the dog days of the season. But I think we're on the same page. Our best lineup doesn't have him in it.
Yeah. Look, honestly, our best lineup has a miracle person who could put on forward pressure, play forward, and also play on the ruck, which is...
It's Tom Lynch playing in the ruck. That's our best lineup.
Yeah, which
and
is...
And it being fine that there's no risk of an injury.
Yeah, which, of course, is... and if a qualification that doesn't exist in the real world. Interestingly, though, like, for a commentator who doesn't watch things as closely, one of the commentators said, Joel looks as good as any 5-game player in the AFL.
Yeah, he's in his fourth season.
Yeah, the funny, yeah. And you know, actually, interesting you raise that. It is, you know, we're kicking ass in the Rising Star ranks right now. And Stack is genuinely amazing.
Shai's in fantastic.
But Shai should not be a Rising Star. I mean, come on, he's in his third year. And I know he's a bottom major, but, you know, like, I do sometimes think, when Shai Bolton's in the Rising Star ranks, it's a little bit unfair to compare him to, you know, first-year players.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, I'm worried about the second ruck situation because it's a real conundrum because we wound up playing Chol less than 50% of the time, and
yeah, which is the Noah Bolter problem as well. Like Bolter's almost more exciting if that's possible.
I prefer Bolter in that role, but the coaching staff don't. And on the flip side is because we were playing a ruck, because we had a ruck sort of sitting on the bench a lot. You know, Cochin paid 85% gain time, which is probably too much for him.
Yeah.
So you know, it's sort of like there's no right answer here, but it's sort of something I've been thinking about a lot is. You know, how you get the matchups right. And, having a second ruck that you only play 50% of the game does have an opportunity cost.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a challenge. Look, the one player I wanted to finish on, we really enjoyed his debut. I think Derek Iglomazi-Smith found the step up in quality to be pretty tough.
Yeah, he was getting burnt a bit, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah, wasn't a great day for him, which is a shame. Like he had a really good debut, I think we're all super excited to see him have a crack at it. But yeah.
Yeah, look, I agree entirely. I just want to go out on a positive note is that Trent Cochin had 68 pressure acts, which is Jack Graham level.
Well, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Mm. So the VFL had a solid win against Werribee. I already mentioned Josh Caddy. I think fairly clear. Best on ground, couple of goals, 26 disposals, 7 tackles. Higgins played pretty well. Townsend, Baker. Baker was good without being dominant. But I was quite encouraged by both Callum Coleman Jones. And again, 17 disposals, 42 hitouts. That's it. That's going well. And Riley Colley-Dawkins, 17 disposals, 8 tackles, had a couple of shots at goal. That's still not quite where you'd like him to be, but it's at least the needle's pointing up after a couple of down weeks. And Dan Butler's very solid.
Yeah. I was very pleased by Caddy's game bouncing back, as you mentioned. RCD was interesting. They talked about, you know, head of recruitment did an interview on, the.
Which I can well recommend.
Yeah, it was really interesting. He talked a lot about Higo, actually, and how he's struggling. He's never played VFL, before, and how it's an adjustment. But he also talked about RCD, how he's a little bit frazzled, a little bit burnt at this time of year. But, you know, there was always going to be a problem with him getting the ball on the outside. He also, funnily enough, he got asked the typical question about Sydney Stack, and I'm just so sick of hearing euphemisms for the fact that Sydney Stack had a difficult home life.
Yeah, it's a bit frustrating.
Yeah, it's like, it's not the, I don't know, it's, you know, I respect them. I don't want them to break their privacy, but it's just, you know, we get it. We get the 8 different ways to say that he had a tough upbringing, but, you know, this, recruiters are going to keep their secrets about that. Yeah, but it was a really interesting interview overall. And
yeah, and look, while we were mentioning it, he did look something that's I've struggled to get a handle on is just what sort of a prospect Maurice Rioli Jr. is.
Yeah,
like he's not tracking to be a star based on what I can see. But there is something to like there. Like, he's played senior football in the NT at a ridiculously young age, which is a good sign. He's been in state teams. And he's playing school footy, so it's quite hard to get, it's harder to get a sense of where he's at. But, yeah, so I think he's draftable, but, yeah, we'll know a lot more next year, but, yeah. It's good to have expectations managed.
Yeah, well said. Anything about before we move on to Port?
Well, the VFL mentioned before, the VFLW team are down a couple of key midfielders at the moment, and yeah, they're struggling. They got towed up by a Melbourne University team that has some very good AFLW players for it. So, yeah, it's, you know, they still had some decent performers. Our players we've mentioned before, like Alec Makua-Chops, reasonably good. Gabby Seymour, undersized ruck. But, it wasn't ideal.
Fair enough. All right. Port Adelaide.
Yes. So, I'd be a lot more worried if they hadn't lost several key players at selection. Ryan Burton, Ollie Wines, and Ebert all out. Yeah, it made me feel better.
I'm always very conscious of recency bias on this podcast, but I genuinely can't remember a more flaky team than the 2019 Port Adelaide team. The inexplicable lows to highs, they just seem ridiculous.
I know, they've got a better percentage than we do. And they've had some really good results. Like, they beat Adelaide by 57 points 2 weeks ago, and on the other side they got towed up by the Lions and beaten pretty easily by the Bulldogs, and then the week before that they beat Geelong.
Yes, it's inexplicable.
It's very difficult to work out exactly.
They've been destroyed by the Hawks. After having destroyed the Crows in the showdown, they actually lost to them by 20 points this year.
Yeah, they beat the Eagles badly.
I don't know, and now we're sort of, it's not them anymore, if you know what I mean, it's because of the injuries. It's an impossible form line to get, but considering we've already been them this year, Okay, so like, with the caveat that they don't rational rules of physics don't apply to them. Really hard to see us losing this game.
Yeah. Look, they've still got Travis Boak and Tom Rockcliffe in the middle. The Greys up forward are pretty productive. West feels like Westhoff's been a pain for us for a million years. Thankfully, he should be coming to the end of his career. They do have some really good young players in there. Their three high draft picks of Connor Rosie, Zach Butters, and Xavier Desma, who's an endurance running machine. And of those, Connor Rosie, the AFL ratings we're very fond of that shows best first-year players, Connor Rosie is tracking ahead of Sam Walsh as well. He's a really good young player.
Mm.
Scott Lysett's no joke as a ruckman either. So, yeah, then they're not going to be easy. And if you look at their stats, they're pretty well put together in some key areas, including midfield. They take marks inside 50. But we should beat this version of this team, especially at the MCG.
Yeah, no doubt. Absolutely no doubt.
They hardly ever play at the MCG, although their record's okay when they do, but it's hard to tell because they play there so rarely.
It is going to be... Well, actually, I'm sort of overly confident about this game, so that could end badly for us.
Yeah, I'm gonna be a mess by game time.
Of course you are. You always are. one thing I'm super excited about, aside from the game, which I think we can at least universally predict that we should do all right in, is Nant coming back in the VFL, because with a lot of players returning, there's a little bit of you gain some and you lose some. Last week we had Caddy playing in the VFL. Caddy is now top 15 most talented guys, but when you can't fit a square peg into a round hole, so you can't always play your best 22, but in pure talent terms, but Nat coming back is a pure upgrade on Soldo. That makes us a better team. So I'm very excited about him coming back. And I'm also very excited about Marlon Pickett potentially coming back the week after.
I'm really looking forward to that as well. And the club doesn't... They're not backing away from expectations with him. You'll certainly have to start in the VFL and have a couple of games there, but they're not. They're not doing anything to rule out, him being a chance.
Mm. Dimmer made the comment. Made that comment. Yeah, I think I would not be at all shocked if he played in our late season and actually played well. Fresh legs.
It apparently he's been doing a mini pre-season. Nank's been named in the VFL. Good times.
Indeed.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
For the strong in the bowl who have been taunted and traumatised for over 37 years, this one is for you. Richmond, yes, Richmond, our premiers. 5:13 p.m. on Saturday, September 30, 2017, is officially Tiger Time.
We never wait until the last time.
The Tigers are
like the tiger of old. The storm and the bone for the Tigers. Yellow and black, we're from Tigerland.
It's just a celebration of all good things Richmond right now.
Come from Bowie.
Alex Rance.
He's never not going to go, was he? Was he?
What a pick up from Conjun. Left foot snap. The goal of the game.
Trent Dimmer and Brendan Gale deserve all the credit. They've built something fantastic and they just got to keep riding away.
attacking fury to inside.
Richmond can get their first win.
In any valley you will see a splinter win. Risking head and skin, it's where behind them. Never mind, we'll fight and fight and win. For we're from Tigerland. We never weak until the final siren's gone. Like the tiger of old, we're strong and we're bold. For we're from Tiger, yellow and black. We're from Tigerland.
D. Martin, three votes.